This podcast is an interview with John Seddon, a man who's developed something of a controversial reputation, a man who certainly challenges convention, and of course, like Deming and Cohen, this is exactly why we like him. Today we asked John to speak to us about the issues and trends affecting human resources management from 2010 onwards. So let me welcome you, John.
Thanks, Andy. Hi.
Hi. Perhaps firstly, John, can you give us a little of your background?
Yeah, sure. I'm an occupational psychologist. 30 years ago, I was studying behavior, people's behavior in organizations. I was starting to understand something that Deming taught me later. It's the system that governs their behavior. It kind of teaches us why culture change is a nonsense. Culture change is, in fact, free. If you change the system, the culture changes. I spent my career really starting to try and understand service organizations as systems, and then how to make that change. And that's really what I've been doing for the last 30 years or so.
And personally, I've seen many examples of the impact of making those kind of changes. For example, I recently took David Amos, who's a program manager from the Improvement Service in Scotland, to meet with Alison Angus in Edinburgh City Council to see what they've been doing there. And now what amazed him most, apart from the outstanding service results they now get, was really how enthusiastic and motivated the people were. And this was not only the internal consultants, but in particular the people doing the work. John, could you tell us what happened to these people?
Well, it's interesting because that's the paradox. Nothing happened to the people in the sense that nothing was done to the people. What happened was the people and their managers studied and changed their system, because as I say, it's the system that governs their behavior. You know, like you, I take a lot of people to sites where people are practicing systems thinking, typically senior leaders, and they look at what's going on and they get very enthused about the evident culture of people, up, happy, solving problems, and they say, I don't know what you've done with these people, whatever it is, I want it bottled, because they're assuming the wrong thing. Actually, nothing's happened to the people. The people work in a system where, they serve their customers, they control the work, motivation is intrinsic. They actually work harder and they feel less stressed. It's a bit like Hertzberg always said, if you want people to do a good job, design a good job to do.
I mean, that's quite an assertion, John, but yet David and I saw it for ourselves in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Just happily motivated people. Is this a good example of what the HR community think of as employee engagement?
Well, now, that's kind of tricky ground. I'm an interventionist. If we think about employee engagement as an intervention we ought to go and do, we're always going to fail. It's a bit like empowerment programs or motivation programs. It's a system that prevents people being engaged. It's a system that prevents people being empowered. So if we run an intervention to engage people, we don't change the system, nothing will change. Engagement, empowerment, motivation, these are outcomes from changing the system.
Now, we know there's a government-backed campaign to improve employee engagement, and amongst a number of key requirements there we're emphasizing is the need for leadership. Now, surely changing the system must imply leadership. What would your advice be on tackling leadership in that context?
Well, it's axiomatic, isn't it? There's no change without leadership. In a systems world, we take the view that the leader, of course, is responsible for the system, and the leaders have to change the system. This is not a leadership program, but it's a change of perspective on the role of managers. The way you get the perspective is you have to study what you're doing. You have to unlearn what we used to think of as management and learn a better way to manage. What you learn as a leader is you're not in the business of managing people and managing budgets. That doesn't work very well. The job of leaders is to act on the system.
And that's quite different from what, as you say, we traditionally think of as management.
Yeah.
So how do people like City of Edinburgh then start this kind of change?
Oh, the starting place for this change, again, and this is unusual too, we think about change as, needing a plan. You mentioned earlier there's government-backed campaign to improve employee engagement. Government seems to back all kinds of silly ideas, one of which is that you must have Prince 2 if you're going to make a change. The change is about project management. It's an absurd idea, really, but it's a conventional idea.
Mm-hmm.
Systems thinkers reject planning. Instead of planning, the only plan, in a sense, is to go and get knowledge. So you get out there, you study your organization's system, And from a position of knowledge about the what and why of current performance, you're in a great position to change things for real improvement.
Mm. Now, for most people listening to this, that sounds very different from most kinds of change programs they would have been involved with or led themselves.
Well, yes, and it is. You know, when you study your organisation as a system, it reveals that the problems that you thought you had are not actually your real problems.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get over that. You know, we get obsessed with things like, how do we sweat the workers harder, you know, reduce activity times. And these are not actually the problems in service organisations. It's the wrong mm-hmm. way to think about them, and thinking about these things makes them worse. But when you get knowledge about what the real problems are, then you feel terrific because you're in a strong position to improve performance.
Mm. Now, in the current climate, John, this is going to be a huge challenge for the public sector in the coming decade. We also know that HR leaders and departments are being challenged to help deliver sustainable organisational performance, particularly under the banner of the CIPD, three-year research programme called Shaping the Future. So what kind of contribution does systems thinking make in that context?
Well, profound. I mean, you know, go back to the start of this. You know, you saw terrific results in Edinburgh. You see terrific results everywhere. Another thing they've been doing in Edinburgh and other parts of the countries is highways work, potholes to you and me.
Mm.
You know, typically people double or treble their productivity in dealing with potholes. You see doubling of productivity in things like benefits processing. Most housing services, you achieve 40% or so efficiency savings.
Mm.
I was just looking at an IT help desk yesterday in a council near Manchester where, you know, when they started studying it, they realized it was a misnomer, it didn't help. Now it mm. does help, and it's operating at about 20% less cost. So, you know, these are big numbers, actually, and these are numbers that you never would put in a plan.
Mm. Now, with spectacular results like that, why isn't everybody doing it?
Well, this is the problem. It's a big challenge to convention. You know, this is where HR could have a critical role. You know, we talk in HR about aligning skills and knowledge of the people in an organization. Well, in mm-hmm. systems terms, you know, we think about that as training against demand. You know, you think about some of those cases I've just talked about. You can do this in potholes, you can do this in benefits, you can do this in housing repairs, you certainly do it in IT help desk. You know, let's understand the demand that's coming into these systems. Let's build the expertise in the people at the front end so they've got the expertise to solve customers' problems immediately. Let's give them the means to control and improve their own work. You know, amazingly, you find typical consequences of training time, for example. You know, in conventional call center type front end service organizations, typical training time is 8 weeks, and the system's designed because you're training against demand, it falls to about 2 weeks. Now, you put people in control of the work, the consequences for retention are fantastic because less people leave. And you think about, you know, how different that is to what conventional HR does. You know, we think HR is there to help manage absence. And it was an absurd idea. You learn if you manage absence, absence goes up because it's a symptom. We encourage managers to appraise people. Again, absurd idea. You know, we're setting people up to fail and then causing, you know, putting the blame on them, whereas systems thinkers take the view that people's performance is a management responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We should give people the wherewithal to do their work.
Yeah.
And all of these things together, you know, create a massively better culture as well as mm. better performance.
Indeed. And now, is this what HR folks would recognise as the domain of organisational development?
Well, I suppose it could be. I mean, I was an OD specialist in my early days and sort of developed into what I've been doing since. You know, the words are similar. You know, perhaps the methodology is different to conventional OD. The principles in systems thinking are really about changing completely the way leaders and managers think about the design and management of work and indeed the way they think about people in their organizations and indeed human nature.
Mm. So from what you're describing, this means major changes to HR approaches and policy, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, and I'm often asked by HR directors when we start in an organization, you know, how it is going to affect policy. And I always say, I mean, I know the answers, but I always say, let's park it, you know, park mm-hmm. that question, because you mustn't drive change through policy. it's the wrong way to intervene. The way to drive change is to understand and improve the operations, and then address the question, how do we write policy that supports this view of the world? And that way you get good HR policy. You also avoid having arguments with people about things they don't yet understand.
Yeah. Now let's turn to the provision of HR services. All HR leaders are focused on improving the efficiency and effectiveness of their HR departments.
Yeah.
Can systems thinking be applied to them?
Almost certainly. There are many organizations that have made a change in their HR services. You can treat HR services within an organization as a service organization, within an organization. You take the same routine, you study the system and you redesign it. There's a great example in Scotland from quite a few years ago now. Standard Life created a central services function and applied the systems approach to it with outstanding results. I was at Stockport Council a couple of weeks ago. They've studied HR services and redesigned them. They all work much better, and they've just about doubled their productivity. So, and it's also, it's also a great place to start because it teaches the HR community a lot about systems thinking and its importance in terms of how you design work.
Absolutely. Now, many times throughout my career, I've heard people refer to HR as the Department of Human Remains.
Uh-huh.
Now, that at the time hurt my feelings and indeed pride. But then I thought, actually, that's often what HR people are dealing with every day. What would your thoughts be on that?
Well, I think to take a historic sort of perspective on this, that I think HR has developed in a sense dealing with symptoms associated with command and control management, conventional management. Command and control management essentially has a rather adversarial attitude towards people. The idea is that we need to hire people and sweat them as assets. A very important book came out last year. The title was We Sell Our Time No More. It was all about the unions fighting lean in manufacturing, talking about it's become another tool to sweat the assets. It's just the wrong way to go. HR has to deal with a lot of symptoms from command and control systems. We do employee surveys, we do culture audits, but we don't really learn anything that's useful. And I talked earlier about absence management, that's a classic. Other examples are empathy training, when it's the system that stops people being empathic towards their customers. You often hear managers say, how do I get rid of dead wood? We didn't hire dead wood. Systems take spirit out of people, create dead wood. So, just as a lot of the causes are in the system, the command and control conventions, I think HR could play a leading role in helping managers understand some of these things. Like we've invented management. It's free to us to change it. Change can be for the better, employing the talents of people. HR people can help their organizations realize these truths and help them understand and transform them and provide better services, lower cost, happier people. And that, in turn, would change what HR is going to be about.
And I think that certainly holds out some hope and challenge, certainly, for the HR profession in the coming decade in all the kinds of organizations that they work. So, John, well, thank you very much for your stimulating contribution today.
That's my pleasure.
We'll hopefully be transcribing the interview so you can read the interview in full, and this will be available on the Vanguard Scotland website shortly. But for now, and until the next time, John, many thanks.
Thanks, Andy, and goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.